Good morning and welcome to Sport and Life with Sam Kekovich and Leon Weegaard. Sam, you're looking resplendent.
I am.
You've been up the top end.
I have up the top end. And it's always a great reminder of the complexity and the vastity of this great nation of ours. You wouldn't believe, from the eastern seaboard to the top end, and bearing in mind if you're in Europe, you'd go from probably Portugal to Russia, 4.5 hours. But more importantly, the cultural and the there's just a change of, you know, the landscapes and everything. Yeah, but it's fantastic. Whilst it's different, it is absolutely outstanding.
How about the pub you rang me from?
The which?
The pub you rang me from. You were...
No, it was a museum in the cultural, the art centre I rang you from.
An hour and a half from
It was
Dallas.
The drip tray there called Dundee. You wouldn't believe it.
The Dundee Art
the
Gallery.
Dundee, it was a Dundee tavern. It was right on the ocean. And live crocs, crocs galore. You don't swim anywhere near there.
Yeah.
And we managed to secure a table right on the veranda there, overlooking the ocean. It's quite, it's fantastic, unique.
You'd be lucky to get a table 150 miles from Darwin.
Well, it was a bus trip. We had an enjoyable bus trip. Although I must confess, the driver even lost his way to find it. Would you believe? But it was most enjoyable. Part of the Whitten Foundation.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you were supporting a charity, which is very good.
Yeah, the Whitten Prosto. We always go over there to the Tiwi Island Grand Final.
Yes.
Which is, we award the Whitten Medal to the best player on the ground. And it's been going on for some odd 30 years since the great man. That's how we perpetuate the memory of the great man. But it was a wonderful 4 days away. But I must confess, Leon, and this without being patronising or condescending, because you know I'm not, but it's always nice to be back on terra firma where I'm acquainted with, people like yourself, who I share a great affinity with, Dan, our producer, who reminds me of the frailties and vagaries of human life, and what else have I left out? Oh, fuck, it's good to get home to my missus.
We lost a good mate in the last few days.
Well,
now,
that floored
me. We mentioned Vang Seng here almost too often, but Vang Seng is a bit of an institution.
It is.
Started in 1961. There'd be no more popular, effective, genuine member over the period than Andrew Plimpton. And what a career.
Well, it's not only a career, the calibre of person. You know, I met Andrew, like, you know, you've known him a lot longer. I've known him for about 20-odd years. But he just left an indelible imprint on everyone he touched. He had a wonderful sense of humour, very intelligent, highly successful. But... look, I knew he wasn't in good health and I knew it was imminent, but it still floored me like it. Honestly, it just could have blown me over with a feather when I found out that...
He was very big in insurance, you know, very big.
Oh, massive, monstrous.
Anyway, we've got somebody to talk about him today, which is very good, and he's coming to the studio here at the Prince of Wales Hotel. Mark Turnbull is a gold medal sailor from Sydney in 2000. And he joins us now. Mark, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Leon. Thanks, Sam. Great. Oh, Jeff, fantastic to be here and especially to talk about Andrew.
Yeah, well, the coincidence is that about 200 metres from here, you ran a function. I've never been to the place before. It was a function in the city, in the bars here, you know, the South Pacific.
We used to go there all the time.
Yeah, but there's a big function room in here. I didn't know that. And Mark ran this show.
Guess who I appeared there with once? Pardon my... diversion, digressing for a moment, with Julia Gillard's husband.
The hairdresser.
Yeah, he was a member of a Yarrawonga group. I just forget the group, a sailing group too. It was a sailing group. I don't know how he was involved, but he was the one that got me to speak there. And I know exactly where the venue was, is. And that's just an aside.
Yeah, well,
a bit of superfluous information.
Andrew and I were on the little panel that... Mark put together. That's an aside too. But Mark, your background with Andrew.
Yeah, because I've grown up in sailing and Andrew's been, I guess, instrumental in lots of sports, so football, business, Olympics and sailing. So I think sailing was probably his personal passion. So he'd done so much, like he was the president of Yachting Australia.
7 years.
7 years of Australian sailing at that time. Commodore of Sorrento Sailing Kuta Boat Club. Yeah. Everyone knew him either as the president. I think that probably started from the St Kilda
or the Admiral
days. And then he became Commodore, then the Admiral. His title just kept expanding as his roles kept expanding. So, yeah, known Andrew for a long time and, had the pleasure, privilege to sail with Andrew a lot recently.
What would have surprised a lot of people if they read all the stuff about him was he was a world champion sailor.
Yeah, you wouldn't pick it. So he's
they never talked about it.
No,
he didn't.
Oh, he did to certain people. He always would remind you if you won a regatta, he'd remind you of the, I think it was the 1988 Etchell World Championship.
Well, the Vang Sang have strict rules about big noting. That might have been he's complying, maybe.
That doesn't sound like the Andrew I know. So, but no, he was an amazing, amazing person. Yeah, he was.
What's that class? The Etchell. What's
the
that
Etchells?
Do?
Yeah. So it's. A really is a high level one design fleet that people like John Bertrand's and Ian Murray's and the best sailors, either once they finish their America's Cup or Olympic sailing, often graduate into the Etchells class.
He's a great mate of Bertrand.
He was, yeah. So from probably way back to 83 or even beyond, I guess. So there was that whole generation of John Savage and John Bertrand and Andrew Plimpton. Melbourne really was the centre of that.
And Sam, his football, his contribution to the Saints was can't be sort of
can't be underestimated. Can't be understated. It was massive.
He was the changing of the game, the whole change of the fabric.
Exactly. But if I may, before we touch on his football, Mark, as you probably gather, the derivative of the surname Kekovic is not Anglo-Saxon. It's got a European connotation. And I was a migrant son, and in our world, sailing's always perceived as an upmarket sport.
Yes.
So I must confess, I'll be implicitly candid with you now that I don't know a great deal about sailing, even though I have been on Sid Fisher's, what was his?
The Ragamuffin.
The Ragamuffin, yep. Through the heads of Sydney. And I don't know why I was invited, but I realised after a while, because of my size and weight.
You took her out, didn't you? Ragamuffin.
I had to sit on one side to get the ballast and the balance. And I thought he saw something in me that maybe ultimately lead me to Sydney to Melbourne, Sydney to Hobart, sorry. But obviously I worked it out pretty quickly. So I must confess, look I've seen a lot of the boats, but I don't understand the varying classes from, you know, the Etchells, as you mentioned, Cooter class. And I watched the Australia Cup with great interest, and we followed it all as we do.
Yeah. Yep.
Your own personal achievement, do you know where your gold medal is? You've got your gold medal, obviously it would be pride of place.
Yeah, I was going to say it's in the car park, but I did leave it at home today.
Did you?
But yeah, it's like I grew up sailing. I was really fortunate to grow up.
Well, you're a Brighton boy.
I started in Tassie. So I was actually born in Tasmania.
Where?
So a little place, my first sailing happened at Port Dalrymple on the Tamar River, just above
Launceston.
I know where
you are, Port Dalrymple,
great little spot. So I started there, grew up around boats. I think the way that my dad could do more sailing was to make sure that his kids sailed. So we were pushed into boats quite early. And then I just progressed and, it sort of became part of my life, what we did every summer. And eventually, all the other good people dropped out, and I was last one standing.
Just for the benefit of the uninitiated, the Etchell class or the Cooter class?
Yep.
The Cooter class, obviously, a sole sailor, right?
No.
One person in the boat?
If you're on Andrew would have said it was him and him alone on it. But so the Cooter boats are this great little fleet down at Sorrento, which are the old classic Cooter fishing boats. And so they're, I don't know, 100 years old, and they were designed to go out through the heads from Queenscliff, get as many fish as they can and race back to port,
right?
Because the first boat back to port got the best price.
Got the best price.
20, 30, 40 years ago, that...
But how many people actually manned the boat?
You could sail it with three or four, but they race with maybe eight or so.
With eight?
Yeah, eight.
So the Etchell class?
And the Etchell was three or four people.
So what's the bottom end of the scale?
Oh, so you start off in what's called an Optimus. So the little kids nowadays, and that's
I see them in the single little, one.
8 foot long, just a little bathtub with a sail.
Yeah.
You then graduate up to boats like I sailed at the Olympics, which was the 470, which is a 4.7 metres long, two people. And then it just gets bigger and more expensive from that point on.
By the way, how did you get together with Tom King, your partner in Sydney?
Yeah, so we sort of grew up in parallel paths. So I was winning in the classes I was sailing. Tom was the same age. We grew up both in Victoria. He competed in the 96 Olympics with a different crew. I was planning to put a campaign together for 2000. Got the phone call out of the blue from Tom saying, Mark, how about we team up and actually do this properly together? And so it was the first time I'd ever crewed on a boat in my life. And we just gelled. So we started in 96 and had 4 years through to 2000 and basically went from our first world title, I think we came 42nd in the world, and eventually after 4 years got to number one.
And there is a history.
Is there a parallel in yachting? It all comes under one big banner.
Yep.
But you talk about the America's Cup, you talk about those multi-million-dollar slips. Mm. So did you ever think of progressing to you from your class of yachting, yes, and sailing? Do you ever aspire to? Is that the pinnacle? There is a whole career pathway,
I guess, and the Olympics are like almost the university. But for me, I never wanted to work in the sport. I love sailing, love doing it, but I never actually wanted to turn that into a job.
A profession,
I actually wanted to have a normal life of wife and kids and mortgage and all those great things. But yes, the progression is you start young, then you do Olympics, then there's the America's Cup professional sailing. So you can do it for a lifetime. It is actually a really good sport that you can get from 6 years old to 86 years old and still compete.
The other thing is, in sport, every sport has gone through these many and varied transitions from being, as you said, very basic to purely enjoyment. And once you get to a professional stage, a lot of these sports have been, either inundated or they've been corrupted, or some people are trying to get the edge.
Yep.
Sailing has always sort of maintained a pretty clean...
Ben Lexham.
Okay. The point I'm trying to make is I remember when we talked about the America's Cup in the early days when, Bondi and the... Prior to Bondi, the New York Yachting Club won it for 3 million years. You couldn't win it off them.
Exactly.
But the boats were all parallel and the boats sailed. Now you look at them, they resemble Formula One vehicles. Exactly. So apples and apples in yachting? I don't understand.
It's changed massively. And even back in the America's Cup, it used to be the Sir Thomas Liptons and the Rothschilds.
That's
and
right.
The stupidly wealthy billionaires of the world back in the early 1900s. And then it sort of transitioned, and it still is at the America's Cup, that level of person. So the Larry Ellistons, the Oracles, and all that sort of thing. It is a design technology race. Like, it's got a lot in common with car racing.
If you have people, laymen like me now question whether it is a sport anymore, like Formula One. Because it's all engineering, it's all sophisticated weaponry, and no longer can I determine as a layman what is sport and what is, So I look at you as a raw product who's there for the enjoyment and got some talent. But I look at these billionaires... Mm. Got their sophisticated Bentleys and Rolls Royces out there in the water, the equivalent too. Yep. And I say to myself, well, I'm not so sure about you, mate.
There is that. So the Olympics is level playing field. So everyone races the same boats. And most one design young sailing is that level playing field, as it has to be. It's a sport. Yeah. You can't have someone having a faster boat. But Sydney to Hobart, America's Cup, it is about who has the best equipment, best crew. Like horse racing, you have the best horses, the best trainers, and it is an arms race to a degree.
Do I have handicaps?
But then you throw the weather in there and you throw all these other variables that suddenly the person who spent the most money crashes out and their boat breaks in half on day one.
Now, getting back to Andrew Plimpton, you said, and rightly so, that he was the Commodore down at Sereno, but I don't think he sailed out of Surrey, did he? He must have had a club here in Melbourne.
I think Royal Brighton, pretty much his home club, starting as a kid and growing up through the sport. But Andrew, and then obviously Sandringham Yacht Club is one of the larger clubs here. But Andrew probably could walk into any yacht club and be seen as a member. I don't think they closed any doors for Andrew.
We lived in North Road, didn't we? Yeah, the beautiful mansion in North Road.
Yeah. So I think Brighton probably was his home club, and then Sorrento, who became Commodore of and transformed that club from... In fact, he transformed a lot of everything he got in from, whether it was Sports Commission, sailing, St Kilda. He sort of left it in a better spot than it was to
now,
start
complete
with.
Change of pace here. Talking about cooter boats, are you old enough to have eaten cooter?
Yeah, the fish.
Yeah.
My word.
Full of bones.
Yeah, full of bones.
Oh, I used to hate it.
Yeah, but...
It was a bit cheaper than flake.
Flake's a nice fish too, don't worry. People, yeah, flake's that's fine. Underrated, fine. But cooter was nice. Well, I'm a country boy, as you know, from Myrtleford.
A lot of and what are the fish
what
up
are,
there.
No, what are the great fish down there?
Carp.
The rainbow... Oh, see, you are so dumb, Dan. And don't ever
so accurate.
Interject. You're a production man and you'll always be producer. You don't know anything about...
Why are you so aggressive?
Because I get very annoyed at people that interrupt when they're not a full book.
Okay.
It's the rainbow trout.
Oh, yes.
The rainbow, a beautiful fish, but very bony as well. So you've got to really, you know, be careful. It's a delicacy. You've got to debone and you masticate your fish properly. See, you being a Fitzroy person, where, you know, food was hard to come
very,
by.
Very few.
You know, you'll gobble it. Anyhow, I do know what the cooter was. Anyhow.
Now, this is an aside too. We're supposed to be very solemn here about Andrew Plimpton, but he loved this.
This is Andrew.
Do you know a place called Lelbert? Have you ever heard of Lelbert?
I have, Lelbert.
It's short of Swan Hill, right?
Yes.
Oh, it must have been 100 years ago. The bank saying, the bloke up there, a fellow named John Crosby, owned the pub. And his mother owned all the pubs in Broken Hill. So we go up there, Frank Sedgman, Max Oppie, two publicans, Des Rowe, third publican, myself, Johnny Stock and the Chucky, who was in charge of shooting
What a...
We had a real crew.
Talk about an eclectic crowd.
And we got there, and the locals had gone out and caught redfin for entree. And then they had wild duck that they'd shot. Well, I hate duck. I can't stand it. So that was the meal.
What a
fair
meal.
In Melbourne, little pub. Yeah. Nothing else there but a wheat silo and the pub.
Well, I was in Broken Hill last year. It's changed dramatically, the landscape there. They had about 100 sort of pubs. There's 17 left in Broken Hill.
Yeah.
But what a fair. Johnny Stocker was with you.
Yeah.
He would have been asleep on the table, Johnny. God. Fond memory. But
the great jockey, Johnny Stocker. Folks, for those that don't
but
remember.
But Andrew would have loved this. This is exactly Andrew Plimpton to a T. And we talk about his football prowess, Mark, which you raised, and Leon earlier. And we've always had this long-standing... you know, joke about, you know, when he sold Tony Lockett. Well, sold, I always said.
Yeah.
And a good friend of ours, mutual friend of ours, is Richard Collis, who was the chairman of the Sydney Swans. And I always say to Andrew, Richard's on the phone, you know, he just wants to thank you for giving him Tony Lockett. Well, he's hit the roof. He said, you don't know the circumstance behind it. The only time he ever raised his voice to me was because I always said, I think you made an error there in judgment. Andrew, well, you. He's talking about, you know, these... Nostrils had flared, his eyes had bulged. You know, he put the gasper out. He said, now, listen, you don't know. Oh, God.
Now, Sam, you know this, and you may know, probably not, but who got who involved with St Kilda? Did Jerry Ryan get Andrew, or did Andrew get Jerry? Because they were great partners.
Great mates. I've got no idea. Might have been, I don't know.
It probably depends on who you asked.
Well, Jerry's overseas at the moment. We can't ask him.
Yep. Who sacked Stan Ellis? Was it Jerry or Andrew?
Well, that's a good question. Now, so what, I know what you're alluding to. Andrew was presiding in the chair. He's the chairman. And now you're telling me about a power base behind the scenes. And, you know, that often is the case in a lot of the corporate world.
Who was the chairman of selectors at that time?
I think the chairman of selectors at, was it Thomas?
Before Thomas.
Before Thomas,
Again, I can't remember his name.
I'm not sure.
Butters?
No, he played.
No, Butters was the chairman after.
Footballer.
Travis Poe. I don't think Travis Poe became
Travis
the president.
He was president.
Yeah. I think Peter Hudson was down there for a while too.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, the bloke I'm thinking about played for Hawthorn, then he went to St Kilda, ex policeman, finished up in clothing. Lived up near, in the country of Victoria.
Dipper.
Anyway,
there's another one of yours.
He was on the scene around that time.
But you're talking about two genuine heavyweights, and let me tell you, the Andrew Plimptons of the world and the Jerry Ryans of the world, St Kilda can be eternally grateful that they had those two powerhouses at their helm at a very, very delicate part of their history, because they were responsible for not only keeping them afloat, but also putting strategies in place and initiatives in place which ensured the long-term future, which they've currently enjoyed.
Yeah, got them into a grand final.
Got them into a grand final, but more importantly, they've ensured that they're secured behind the scenes. You know, they've got a new home, which is debatable whether it's the right way to go, but they've got their own home. They're financial. They're solvent for a change. And they've got a good playing list, and they seem to be well-structured.
Yes, so there's a serious side to Andrew, of course.
Oh, my word.
In fact, all the things he did, there was a very... the Australian Olympic Committee, the Australian Sports Commission, all those things, you know, very, very serious business, but he would bring a levity to it.
Of course. Mark, in your particular case, yachting... where do we stand? How does Australia on the global stage?
Oh, we're pretty strong at the moment. So we've got Paris Olympics coming up in what must be less than 6 months now.
6 months, exactly.
Two of the Australian sailors have been selected. So this guy called Matt Wern, who no one will have heard of, but he's the current reigning gold medalist. He's in the laser class. He's won the last two world championships. He's absolute rock star. He should win a gold. Not to put any pressure on him. And
where's he from?
From Perth. Right. I think they all live in Sydney now, right. but originally from Perth. So he's coming up to his second Olympics and hopefully second gold. So amazing. And the other one is Gray Morris, who's been selected in the IQ foil, which is the new... It's a windsurfer, but right. up on foil. So all of sailing now is... The kids are all into foiling, so it's all actually the boats aren't in the water anymore. They're actually a metre off the water.
I know.
It's amazing.
I've seen that, speed. And it is really. I mean, it looks like great fun if you're a young, fit person.
Oh, it's the next generation. They're just stepping straight into it and chopping dolphins in half. And
you better explain how they obviously just the speed and the action under the water lifts the whole lot out.
Yeah, just like. The sail pushes the boat forward. They now have the foils under the water that lift the boat or the hull or whatever it is out of the water. So whether it's from windsurfers up to round the world sailing and America's Cup, it's all the perfect race for these guys. The boat doesn't get wet. They do their tacks and jibes and the boat would stay totally out of the water.
I know I touched on this earlier and I wasn't being conspiratorial or anything, but every sport, as you probably gathered, has always got that element that's probably trying to get an edge or glean an edge. Now, sailing, is there that capacity, is there that opportunity for some scallywag to take advantage of it in some shape or form?
Yes, they're always...
How? Tell me how. Because drugs aren't the case. No matter...
In every sport, probably drugs are there, but in sailing, I believe the only two positive cases at a world level have been... recreational use of cocaine, so
but
it's
how
not
that
a big problem. So the rules, most boats, they have a box rule. If your boat fits in this box, with really quite tolerances, it's legal. So there's always fine error, little errors you can sort of massage the rules a bit, and some people in some countries push it further than others. But to win, you have to be right on that edge. But at the Olympics, everyone is on that edge. At your club sailing on Port Phillip Bay here, it should be you just turn up and you go sailing for fun, and you come into the bar at the end of the day and you win or lose, you still can celebrate with your mates. It's when it gets too serious and people start spending a lot of money, a lot of time, a lot of effort, America's Cup type stuff.
What's the skill sets for to be a successful sailor? You've got to read the waves and read the wind.
Yeah, it's a very...
Work for the Bureau of Meteorology for 30 years.
Well...
That'd help. Leeward and...
Well, would it, though? They're very getting a baggy letter.
Yeah, so it's... you have to be a physical, certain body type to suit that boat. So if you're the windsurfer guy, you'll look totally different than what I did in the 470s. So we had to be tall and skinny. But that's almost... easy to get to. So the level of fitness isn't like a marathon runner. Like, they're extremely fit athletes for what they do. It's the experience and the tactics. It's like playing chess or tennis. It's probably similar to boxing or tennis. You're trying to beat your opponent. You're not trying to get around the course as fast as you can. So it doesn't matter how far you win by. You just have to beat your opponents, which in a way is you have to slow them down. So, yes, you want to get around the course fast, but you actually... with the rules and how it's all set up, you actually have direct impact in who comes second, third, fourth, fifth.
Now, before we go, we must do that soon. In football, we'd look back over who were the greatest players of all time, and it comes to mind straight away. A number of names that you'd come up with would be the same as most people, the Wittens and all those sort of guys. Or even going back further, Dick Reynolds and Hayden Bunton and all that. In sailing, I remember the names Hardy and...
Jock Sturrock.
Jock Sturrock, yep.
Yeah.
So are they the superstars?
Yeah,
and Bertrand, of course.
Bertrand, obviously. Paul Elvstrom, who's been known as the Great Dane. He revolutionised the sport. I think he was in Melbourne at the 56 Olympics and then probably went to five or so Olympics after that. Ben Ainslie from the UK. I'm probably wrong, but I think he's got four gold medals, maybe five gold medals. His first one was in Sydney in 2000. But Australia, like, we've got awesome sailors at
the moment. What about the contemporaries, the professional sailors that didn't compete in the Olympics?
Yep.
And I found it very interesting that a lot of our top sailors, salesmen, they are actually employed by other countries to master their America's Cup campaigns.
Yep.
Namely...
Murray.
Murray, exactly. Yep. And who's the other great one?
Yeah, so we've, like, right now, so we don't have an America's Cup campaign from Australia, but I think it's probably three at least of the six teams are all skippered by Australians.
Skippered by Australians.
So Tom Slingsby, Nathan Outridge.
Slingsby's the guy I'm thinking of.
James Spittle. These are the best sailors in the world, and they're all Australians. So it's a shame that we don't have our own.
So why don't we have our own, Mark? You're down, but why?
It's money. We keep saying we're
you're
small
from
country.
Brighton, for God's sake, the wealthiest suburb in the world. Money.
What did they say? Alan Bond has come along.
Alan Bond. Bondy can rank up about 100 million. Why can't you guys?
Yeah, sort of put the tin out and see how we go. But it's like the last legitimate shot we had was the Oatley family up in Hamilton Island.
Oh,
they started and entered a campaign for the America's Cup in
Great Boat?
New Zealand.
The Wild
Oats.
Well, no, wine, yeah.
But the reality is they're competing against Larry Ellison's. Like, you've got your Australian billionaires.
Yeah.
And then you've got your people who've got $100 billion in the bank. So for them to throw $100 million at something is it's a money
game. But surely there'd be an organisation answer this question, layman's question. Has it lost its luster, the America's Cup, since we broke the nexus with the yacht club, with the New York Yacht Club? You know, because that was the great intrigue. You know, the America's Cup stood up there, you know, at the very, very mountaintop.
Yep.
Has it slipped down to base camp now in terms of its luster? It's like the Caulfield Cup to the Melbourne Cup.
It has in Australia because we don't have an Australian entry. So I think the America's Cup is bigger and better than it's ever been. It's always attracted the billionaires from the Sir Thomas Liptons to the current ones. It's commercial in that it's more like Formula One now with sponsors, and there's a whole team of 100 scientists and technical people in the background working on their computers to design these things.
Well, I thought...
But we don't... Without an Australian team, it loses that appeal to Australians.
Well, it does, and I can't understand why Australia have always been at the forefront of the vanguard of sport
in every
field. And I couldn't imagine there wouldn't be a microcosm of wealth out there that would say, let's embark on a big campaign to bring the America's Cup to Australia.
And Plimo was one of those people.
Plimo was very much a traditionalist in that regard.
But he was pushing with the Sail JP team, so with Tom Slingsby, to get to start that team together. I'm sure there's still moves afoot there, but it's, I think we're a long way from actually being on the start line.
Mark Turnbull, our guest on Sport and Life, a gold medalist from Sydney. Now, has that gold medal ever changed your life? We're a bit laissez-faire about gold medalists, aren't we?
Yeah. Australia. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be invited here, Leon, otherwise. But it's one of those things that...
What are you suggesting? We're at the top end of the world?
Any shake of the cream.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd still say hello to you if you never won gold.
In the street. Every day. Like, it's one of those things that you prepare for the sporting side. I mean, prepared for so long for the sporting competition, you have no real understanding of what going to an Olympic Games means at the time until you experience it. And then every day afterwards, there's something. There's always something that is because of what happened 24 years ago for me.
Can I ask you another question? Just on face value, and I met you for the first time, you don't appear to be ego-driven, but you're a gold medalist.
Yep.
Now, I walk down the street, everyone recognises me. They know me who I am.
Yes.
You walk down the street, I'm not so sure that people would recognise. Does that irk you a little bit?
No, I walk into a yacht club and no one recognises me.
Yeah, so keep in mind, we are in St Kilda.
I was waiting for that slap. Look, sometimes I set him up for that whack. I don't know why. I must be a masochist.
Yep.
I knew it was coming.
There's the dominoes over the road.
A pizza shop? Eddie Lamb?
It's true. Like, you'd love to be in a sport which is everyone knows your name and you become popular and famous for.
Let me tell you, sometimes it can be a handicap as well.
I love the fact that if you're in sailing, you're quickly brought down to earth. If you soon got an ego, you wouldn't last long. So, it's great, to be in.
Look, I might have been a migrant son, but I've been to the Brighton Yacht Club plenty of times, all right?
Yes.
And I've been to Brighton a lot of times, so I know my geographics.
Yes.
And I know the sailing community pretty well too. I had a brother-in-law heavily involved in sailing.
Yep.
He was a pain in the ass. But anyhow, apart from that, is that on record?
Yes.
You can say he was a prick. Is that on record? You might delete that.
Mark, it's been a great joy having you in here with us. And valet to Andrew Plimpton, of course.
Oh, yeah, the great man.
Well, I think we covered most of the stuff that he's done, but there'll be a whole lot of more stuff. That stuff you sent me from all the different people around the place.
There's a WhatsApp group going at the moment, which I think is about 200 of some really impressive people from all different walks of life.
And
their just comments, sharing their stories and photos.
And the Vang Seng blokes have really responded fantastically.
So it's a celebration.
There you go. We're thinking of you, Andrew, and when you're up there.
And heartfelt prayers and commiserations. Condolences to all his family.
Absolutely.
Now, how about a couple of little drinks for
Well,
Mark?
What we normally do, Mark...
Oh, this is dangerous territory. He's here.
No. Who, Jerry, is he?
No.
Mark, yeah. Mark. Well, this is throwing us up a bit.
How are we going to get out of this?
Well, we don't. Look, we might... Mark, we normally, for our guests who have made the commitment to be with us on site, normally we do a phone or because of circumstances precludes them from being on site. You've obviously, got up early and made the commitment to be with us on site.
Three bottles.
So I've told you 100 times, Dan, if you ever interrupt me again, I'll wrap that, see this cord, as a token gesture or an appreciation of your commitment. We normally buy a lotto ticket, which we share collectively.
Okay.
Well, that's bullshit. What we do is we
say we're going to give somebody 10 bottles.
Hang on. Look.
Mitchell and Wine.
They started to question our integrity now.
It could be in the post, for all I know.
It's two coffees.
I'm warning you. I'll tell you next time. I'll lay one right in your Vera Lynn in a minute. So, Mark, what I'm saying to you, as a gesture of your commitment, we allocate to our guest every week two bottles of... I know you pass a little brief libation. You are.
Yes,
yeah. Red or white, do you drink wine? Or
either, both.
Either or both. Yep. So what we do to our guests, and Leon's in charge of distribution, which is the unfortunate part, because it very rarely gets to both. We have done this for about 4 years. We have over 250 guests. We've been sued by 232 at the moment. But we're endeavouring to... we've had problems with COVID getting drivers to deliver. But I think... what am I trying to say?
The truck broke down.
My dog ate it. Yep.
The dog, I like that one.
Supply chain problems.
Distribution.
Anyway, I've got a couple of nice bottles of red for you.
Yep. Okay. Do we just make a clinking sound and as if I've just handed them, I've received them?
No, we will get a couple of bottles.
You better mention where it's from.
Yeah, from where'd I get to the point? He knows it's Jerry Ryan, he's a great mutual friend of ours, and this yes. opulent edifice that you're partaking, or, you know, which you got your ass sitting on, is owned by the great man, Jerry Ryan. Of course, he's also got owns Mitchelton Winery, as well as Hubert's in the Yarra Valley. So we have a couple of bottles of the product from Mitchelton, which we allocate to our guest. Oh. So we don't have – Jerry's not here at the moment, I think, that we're, but we will get them.
Yeah, he carries around the boot. Yeah.
The Leon's the warehouse.
I look forward to it.
But, Mark, we do. You know, look, and we'll certainly get them to you. What are you looking at, Dan?
How long is this going to last? Mark Turnbull, our guest.
Mark Turnbull, what a great bloke.
Brilliant, thank you.
And it was a fantastic. And Mark, thanks for coming in. And you know, just adding to that, you know, when to a great Australian, Andrew Plimpton, and who you knew very well. And hopefully, all your bits and pieces go well, according to the good Bible, the good book. So enjoy life. Life looks good.
Definitely.
You know, you got a you got a happy life, a happy family, and what have you got family-wise? A matter of interest.
Yeah, two kids.
Two kids.
Yeah, so Charlotte doing year 12. So it's a stress.
Yeah.
Not for her. It seems more stress for us. Yeah. And Alex 15.
So. And of course, your wife is very successful as well. She's in fact, she's more successful than you.
Yeah,
and you won
in
a gold medal.
Way. Yeah, basically
in a corporate seat.
Yep. I'm now her husband.
And sure. How's the garden?
Don't mention those chores.
I do need the hedges trimmed, Leon.
I've got to go back and do my ironing. Oh, God.
I think this program stopped about 20 minutes ago.
Thank you all.